This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This was really a shocking incident that has been recorded on video and posted on various websites. Neo-Nazi skinheads burst into a meeting of volunteer workers in the northern Italian city of Como this week to denounce their efforts helping migrants in Italy.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna reporting from Rome. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, it is World AIDS Day as nations reflect on the global fight to end the pandemic. A new report finds more women than men are seeking life-saving treatment. And barely a week into the job, Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has dashed hopes of reform. He's named his new cabinet, packed with military figures and Mugabe-era politicians. We'll have these stories for you and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. And our top story, it's World AIDS Day, an opportunity to show support for those living with HIV and to commemorate people who have died from AIDS-related illnesses. It's also a chance for nations to reflect on the progress they're making in the fight against the pandemic. A new report finds more men are dying from HIV/AIDS than women. That's because fewer men are getting tested for HIV or seeking life-saving treatment. Lisa Schlein is in Geneva for us with this report.
The report finds men have what it calls a blind spot when it comes to getting tested for HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. And if they do not know their HIV status, the report says men are unlikely to get treatment and will die. UNAIDS says the situation is particularly acute in sub-Saharan Africa, where men and boys living with HIV are 20% less likely than HIV-positive women and girls to know their status. The report says even larger numbers are less likely to seek treatment and warns that people who are not being treated are more likely to transmit the AIDS virus. While more women are likely to be living with HIV, more men are likely to die from this fatal disease, says Peter Gies, the chief strategy officer at UNAIDS. He says the reason is that fewer men than women receive antiretroviral therapy, citing a figure of 47% for men compared to 60% for women.
Then also once people are on treatment, we find that men are actually less likely to be fully observant or adherent to their treatment. And so it results actually in higher mortality of men living with HIV than women in living with HIV. And so about 58% of all the AIDS-related deaths that were observed in 2016 are occurring among men, even though there are more women living with HIV.
Global trends on the HIV/AIDS epidemic are generally positive. New data show AIDS-related deaths have declined by nearly half since a peak in 2005. But the epidemic is far from over. UNAIDS reports nearly 2 million people worldwide became newly affected with HIV last year, and more than 1 million people died from AIDS-related illnesses. The report shows fewer men than women visit healthcare facilities and so are less likely to be diagnosed with life-threatening conditions. It says many men avoid getting tested because they fear being stigmatized by knowing their HIV status. Many others, it says, refrains from receiving life-saving treatment because they believe they are invincible. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Moving to Southern Africa now, and barely a week into the job, and Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is already coming under fire. He's announced his new cabinet, packed with military figures and Mugabe-era politicians. It's a worrying sign for those who had hoped the new president would break from the past. Kudzai Chinavashe has more from Harare.
Briggs Bomba is with the Citizen Manifesto, an initiative that curates and represents the citizens' vision of a better Zimbabwe.
We are totally disappointed in so-called new cabinet. In fact, Our starting point is that there is nothing new. The very same dead wood of ministers whose legacy is failure, corruption and incompetence has been recycled. As such, Zimbabweans cannot expect any fresh thinking or any miraculous deeds.
He adds that President Mnangagwa has failed to live up to his earlier pledge of a smaller government.
Mnangagwa has failed to come through with his promise to reduce the size of cabinet. The last Mugabe cabinet had 26 ministers, so you can't talk of a historic shrinking of cabinet, which is what we needed, and you just move from 26 to 22.
Other critics note that the cabinet has fewer women and younger people. The appointment of two senior Defence Forces members also has raised concerns over the size of the military role in government. Bomba also says Mnangagwa has failed to tap into the spirit of inclusivity because he did not name technocrats and members of the civic society and opposition to his cabinet. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Parley, an online news site that has citizen journalists reporting from parliament and other political events. He has a vision for an ideal cabinet.
12 ministers, we don't need 22 ministers. Why do we need 22 ministers? 12 ministers, and there needs to be a perfect balance that meets the obligations of the Constitution. The Constitution says that there has to be a gender balance. And right now we have 3 women out of 22. We need more women and more young people. The average age of the current cabinet is 68. We have no representation of young people.
Despite the familiar names on the cabinet, political and economic analyst Vince Musewe is hopeful.
My view is that I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't want to be negative. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to trust him, and I'm going to focus on the vision that he has articulated to get this economy going. And he has 10 months to prove it. But personally, I'll give him 100 days.
Some critics, such as Dodo, also say they worry that Mnangagwa's decision to retain the cybersecurity division indicates the government has not given up the repressive tendencies of President Robert Mugabe's rule. For VOA, this is Kudza Nawashe from Harare.
Over half of Zimbabwe's population was born after former President Robert Mugabe came to power in 1980. During his 37 years in office, the economy nearly collapsed. His government restricted media and the opposition, and many young Zimbabweans had given up on the idea of a role in national politics. Rutendo Mutsamiri hopes that will change. She was part of a special panel discussion in Washington hosted by VOA's Zimbabwe service. Mutsamiri is founder of the Women to Watch Network. She spoke to VOA's Kudzanai Mutetwa.
So, Rutendo, during the panel discussion, you talked about how youth have become apathetic and how they're looking for something to kind of propel them forward. What do you think would be the best step forward to do that?
I think the best empowerment starts in the mind. Young people have to decide that the time is now and today will not be repeated, will not be given 2017 again or 2018 again for us to have an election. Young people have eight months to actually decide which political home they want to be in and which change they want to be a part of. Is it a change that completes the transition or it's not? So young people have to step up. They don't have to wait for anything. They have to know that their vote is their voice and is their right, and they have to work on it to actually be accounted for as voters in Zimbabwe come 2018, me included.
And do you see any young people who are looking to get into politics now that there has been a shift in the idea of what Zimbabwe can be?
A lot of young people, especially young women, have been in politics either as aspiring candidates, either as helpers to the current MPs or shadow ministers. And we have seen a lot of young women dating back from 2011 who have been active in politics. We talk of Maureen Kademaunga, we talk of Tendai Wenyika, we talk of Cecilia Chifunga, Varai Zompunga. These are ZANU-PF and MDC young people, including myself, who have been standing up saying we're ready to take the lead where young women is concerned. We've got the minister who is already there, Tabitha Kanyongoni. So we have seen a lot of young women in Zimbabwe who are stepping up to say we're ready. And we are not, and one thing we have to encourage each other as young people and as young women is we don't have to wait for anybody to give us some kind of quota system, because if we're going to wait for a quota system to come our way, it will never come, because the war vets are already starting to claim a quota system for themselves. The women in general are claiming a quota system, and when women did it as a bracket, oh, we want a quota system, you'll notice that most young women were not a part of it. The young people, yes, talked about a quota system as well, but how far have we gone in that? So let's not wait for quota systems as young people. Let's just go on, take and pursue and overtake where we have to overtake as young people, because we're ready and we've got it.
What advice do you have to any young women who are looking to go into politics?
Do it now. Just do it now. Don't think about it. Do it now. And also at the same time, know, on a practical note, know your political system as a young woman. If you want to be in ZANU-PF, know what ZANU-PF is about. Go to the DCC. They are talking about the DCCs. Go to that community level. Be part of the DCC. Buy your card. Be a member. Be involved. And if you want to be in MDC, do the same as well. You're not going to wake up and give an post simply because you're a young woman, but be there, be active, participate, and also at the same time then organize yourselves as young women, as young people, and find who your stakeholders are in your constituency and start running. At the same time, we know leaders are not perfect and young women are not going to be perfect, and I'm sure you saw the clip that was going around about all the young women who were vandalizing things. I want to say no leader is perfect, and these young women too are aspiring leaders, and they cannot be perfect. So let's not be too harsh on each other as young people. Otherwise, we're not going to have leaders at all. If we're going to set our bar so high, yes, we can hold our leaders accountable. We can hold each other accountable as young people. But take it easy on each other so that we learn and we grow together and build the country that we want to build.
Thank you very much, Rutendo.
Thank you very much.
And that was Rutendo Mutsamira, founder of the Zimbabwe activist group Women to Watch Network, speaking there to VOA's Kutsunai Mutetwa in Washington. Now, years of political tension and turmoil in Zimbabwe have seen many of its people stream into neighboring South Africa. In 2000, then-President Robert Mugabe's government began a crackdown on opponents that sparked violence and caused an economic and social meltdown. With a new president in office, rights groups helping migrants in South Africa say they're not seeing a mass return to Zimbabwe. And one health expert warns for some, going home could be a traumatic experience. Darren Taylor is in Johannesburg for us with this report.
No one's sure exactly how many Zimbabweans are in South Africa striving for better lives. Aid groups say it's at least 2 million. Professor Joe Veery examines the effects of forced migration on people's health and emotional well-being for the African Center for Migration and Society at Wits University in Johannesburg. Veery says migrants are choosing to remain in South Africa despite their daily struggles for food and shelter.
The stress of trying to access particular services, combined with the stress of how sometimes non-nationals are treated. So, for example, a fear of violence, experiencing xenophobia or anti-foreigner sentiments, can affect the way that they can function day to day. It can affect their ability to deal with underlying trauma or previous problems, because getting by in the day to day is so difficult.
Veery acknowledges that many South Africans also battle to get adequate mental health care, for example. But she says for the Zimbabweans, problems like these are compounded by their marginalization in South African society.
What we then see is that where individuals may wish to try and access public healthcare services, they may actually choose not to try because of fear of the way that they may be treated, fear of the police, and those sorts of issues.
She particularly remembers stories of pregnant Zimbabwean women who've tried to access maternal healthcare.
They feel that they are very much sidelined in terms of treatment, often feeling that they are made to wait far longer and not given support and help from healthcare professionals.
Veery says Zimbabweans often bear the brunt of xenophobia because of their sheer numbers in South Africa. But she adds that some migrants have also been treated generously.
Particularly in state structures, there are some fantastic people working, whether it's in frontline healthcare or in other services, who really do go out of their way to support and ensure that Zimbabweans are able to access the services to which they're entitled, supporting children getting into school.
She says many Zimbabweans will stay in South Africa because no matter how bad it is here at this stage, it's still better than back home.
But also about being able to live in a context where people don't feel threatened by virtue of, for example, political affiliation, ensuring that people can feel safe and secure in the place in which they're living.
She hopes that the change in Zimbabwe will result in a government that cares more about all its people's rights and gives them avenues to what she calls the social determinants of health and emotional well-being.
And what we really need to do is think about how we can support, both in Zimbabwe and in South Africa, access to those very basic fundamental rights. And what we should then see is the ways in which that would then impact on improving people's health and well-being.
But Fieri says most Zimbabweans she's speaking with say they won't go back to the country of their birth unless its economy improves dramatically, especially since the cash that some earn in South Africa keeps their families back home alive. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Moving abroad now, and neo-fascists disrupted a migrant aid meeting in the northern Italian city of Como earlier this week. The band of about 15 men said they belong to a group called Veneto Fronte Skinheads. They stormed the meeting of Como Without Borders, a network of associations that helps migrants and refugees. The neo-fascist group surrounded the meeting and denounced the work of Como Without Borders. The interruption was videotaped and has been circulated on the internet. Reporter Josephine McKenna described the incident to VOA's Kim Lewis.
This was really a shocking incident that has been recorded on video and posted on various websites. Neo-Nazi skinheads burst into a meeting of volunteer workers in the northern Italian city of Como this week to denounce their efforts helping migrants in Italy. Now, about a dozen men who say they belong to a group called the Veneto Fronte Skinheads looked very, very threatening as they interrupted this meeting as people were meeting to try and discuss issues and initiatives to help migrants and refugees. And dressed in a uniform of black bomber jackets, the men surrounded the volunteers and read out a very strong statement slamming immigration, telling them that they no longer supported the country that they love, and said that it was time to stop what they called the invasion and to stop ruining the country of Italy. Now, it only lasted a few minutes, but it looked very, very threatening on video. And it's an alarming sign of how visible these neo-fascist groups are becoming in Italy, as economic crisis and the arrival of thousands of migrants have been quite a devastating combination and fueling xenophobia in certain elements of the population in Italy. Now, there's been a very strong reaction as well. We saw a strong reaction from the group itself saying it was unacceptable. And we saw an outcry from centre-left politicians who said that it was completely unacceptable to intimidate people in a country like Italy, especially people who are doing their utmost to help migrants.
And that was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome speaking to VOA's Kim Lewis. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. The United States and Niger have struck a deal that will allow armed American military drones to be used against jihadist terrorist groups in the West African country. That's according to a U.S. official who spoke to VOA. The agreement is a major expansion of America's counterterrorism efforts in Africa. It's not clear whether the drones will be used to carry out targeted strikes or solely as a defensive measure. Until now, the United States has only conducted airstrikes against terrorists operating inside Libya and Somalia. U.S. officials say arming drones based in Niger would expand their ability to go after extremists in West Africa, where Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, and Islamic State fighters operate. Tomorrow marks Gambian President Adama Barrow's first year in office. VOA's Pandere Mbai reflects on his first 12 months and the political impasse that forced former dictator Yahya Jammeh out of office and into exile.
Mr. Barrow's presidency has paved the way for the restoration of democratic rule in the Gambia, a nation that was at the mercy of one of Africa's worst despots, Yahya Jammeh. Mr. Jammeh is a former military ruler who was in power for over 22 years. He lost last year's election to Adama Barrow, a former real estate developer. Mr. Barrow was sworn into office in neighboring Senegal on January 19, 2016, after Jammeh's refusal to concede defeat.
This is a day no Gambian will ever forget in one's lifetime. This is the first time since the Gambia became independent in 1965 that Gambia have changed their government through the ballot box. I must take this opportunity to thank the entire electorate of the Gambia and Gambians in the diaspora for making this day.
The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, had to issue a stern warning to dictator Yahya Jammeh to respect the mandate of the Gambian people or risk being forced to leave office. Gambia's political impasse had lasted for 1 month. Many were forced into exile in neighboring Senegal. Mr. Jammeh finally agrees to step down amid sub-regional pressure.
I believe in the importance of dialogue and in the capacity of Africa to resolve among themselves all the challenges on the way towards democracy, economic and social development. It is as a result of this that I have decided today, in good conscience, to relinquish the mantle of leadership of this great nation with infinite gratitude to all Gambians, women, children, youth and men, and friends of the Gambia who have supported me for 22 years in the building of a modern Gambia.
Pass Samba Jau is a Gambian political analyst. Mr. Jau gauges the performance of President Barrow's one-year-old government.
In terms of Barrow's presidency, I'll give it a 6 out of 10, given the challenges that they have faced, because I believe that this is a government that has taken over a country that has been destroyed so seriously for over 22 years.
The new government said it is committed to alleviating poverty and stamping out official corruption. It has so far instituted democratic reform programs, especially in the areas of governance, security, and the media. The new government has promised to cut down on wasteful spending. It has also set up a commission of inquiry to investigate dictator Yahya Jammeh and his government's past financial dealings. So far, Mr. Jammeh has been linked to embezzling millions of dollars of taxpayers' money. But Pass Samba Jau says more should be done to meet the developmental aspirations of Gambians.
Well, first of all, I think the most is definitely the economy of the Gambia needs to be further revamped. We know that most Gambians, especially those in the urban area, are not very happy with the energy sector. And I also believe that in terms of strengthening governance, and we also looking at rewriting the constitution, and I believe that we have to have a better constitution. This government must work to also better our security services, where they will be more in tune with democratic principles.
Reformers would like to see changes like abolishing the Public Order Act. It prohibits Gambians from using a public address system without a police permit. The act is an old colonial law and part of the constitution. The leader of the United Democratic Party, Usainu Darbo, and his colleagues were jailed under the same law. The matter was taken to the Supreme Court, which ruled the law is constitutional. It also dismissed the appeal filed by Mr. Darbo, who is also the country's foreign minister. There is also growing call for a term limit to be introduced for the presidency. For VOA Africa, this is Pandey Mbai reporting.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News. That's coming up at 16:30 UTC. And for all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer Bill Workinger and our engineer Jonah Cummings, thank you for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.